If I could recommend one thing about parenting more than one kid, it's bribery. Welcome to Not Right Now, the podcast about parenting through all of this.
We'll be talking about / crashing out over topics like
soccer snacks and sea level rise.
While the Arctic melts? Question mark?
Cleaning out uneaten lunchboxes again at 4 p.m. or 10 p.m. every day.
Youth sports and other camp signups you forgot about and won't get into anyways. And is there such a thing as unstructured time anymore for anyone? For me?
It's not an advice show.
It's a you're not alone and you're also not crazy for screaming in the shower kind of show. I'm Claire Zulke from Evil Witches.
And I'm Quinn Emmett from Important Not Important.
You can find details on anything we talk about in the show notes or at our website, notrightnow.show.
And if you like what you hear today, please share it with a parent who needs it or who might laugh and tell their kids to be quiet. And then drop us a nice little 5-star review.
And reminder, you can send questions or feedback to questions@notrightnow.show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another conversation, Not Right Now. I hope you all are surviving out there. We've got an awesome guest today. Her name is Fortessa Latifi. She is a journalist, author, and new mom who has spent years investigating the wild world of family influencers and the kids growing up on camera. It's very different from when I was growing up. Fortessa's new book, Like, Follow, Subscribe, coming out soon, uncovers what happens when childhood becomes content and asks how parents can protect their kids in an always online world. Good news. It's more complicated than you think, which is always probably the right answer and, you know, good to keep in mind. So really enjoyed this combo and appreciate everybody giving it a listen.
Quinn, you know that Fortessa is currently pregnant.
Yep.
Her baby is trying to destroy her from the inside.
That sounds perfect. From my understanding, that's just what they do. So.
Yeah. No, totally. I'm okay. I'm hanging in there. I'm just like trying to make it to a good enough time to just get to birth, you know?
How far along are you now?
I'm 25 weeks. Yeah, but my last daughter came at 37 because I had this with her too, although it's worse this time. So I don't think I'll have to make it to 40.
I just feel for you because being pregnant is no party, no matter what. I mean, unless you're one of those people who loves being pregnant. But and doing it the second time, like when you already know too much, you know, is and you have a kid is and being sick like that. Like I was asking for a vasectomy while I was pregnant, maybe even. Like,
my God, that's me right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw your Instagram because you were like, you know, it is possible to hate being pregnant and love your kids. And I was like, who is even suggest? I mean, thank God that we live
version?
In. No, I know. I mean,
I can't stand people who like being pregnant. And my sisters like being pregnant. And I'm like, you guys are bitches and I don't want them.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you. And no, it just makes you think, honestly, that's the kind of stuff that makes me even more pro-choice. Where you're like thinking about the people who like, were like, why didn't you just carry the baby and give it up for adoption? You're like, what if the baby's actively murdering
look at
you?
Me. Like I look and I have an IV in my hand right now. My eyes look like I got punched in the face. Oh my God. I hate it.
People are like, isn't it beautiful? Aren't you excited? Don't you feel
the girl is so special and it's so sweet.
This kid better sleep through the night from day one for what she's put
fucking
me through.
Day like get a job and
I know she is really sweet and cute and fun. And I mean, how was your first one? In terms of you motherhood, like new motherhood, you know, the transition period and everything like that.
You know, I mean, it was hard. Like it was hard for everyone. But I think because I came out of such a traumatic pregnancy, it was like easier. Like I felt stronger. Like I felt even though I wasn't sleeping, like I felt capable. Like right now, I just don't feel like capable. I just feel like weak and tired.
Yeah. I mean, I will say, I don't know if it'll be the same for you. I enjoyed my second kid a lot more because I wasn't a new mom, you know, and I felt I mean, I know that's not always the case across the board, but I mean, he turned out to be the one, of course, who like set our life on fire. But like for a while he was a baby, he was really cute and engaging. And so I hope that she's the same for you. But yeah, I was wondering if it was a boy because I was like, only a man would come and like mess up your book like this. But that blows up.
No, it's a girl. She doesn't believe in gender roles, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Well, condolences that you need to promote this book while doing all this. But I found you because Jordan Reed had me on her podcast, and she and I go back as like blogger, old school bloggers. You know, I was not, I would say, as much of an influencer as she was. Quinn, I think I told you about Jordan. She's a writer. The shorthand is that she was the original Sweet D on Always Sunny in Philadelphia, but there's much more to her than that. But she told me about your book, and Quinn and I talk about parenting in this day and age, and I was like, this book is fits perfectly with what we talk about. So, but that's kind of how I found you.
You can cut it 10 different ways, and it's applicable to most of our conversations.
Oh, amazing. I'm so glad.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us about the genesis and, you know, conception? Let's pretend your book is about to, you know, be born the same time as your baby. Like, talk a little bit about how you got on this beat and how you decided to sort of what your methodology was for putting the book together.
Yeah, totally. So I grew up, I'm 32. I grew up in the age of 16 and pregnant on MTV and Teen Mom.
Classic.
I was like, and I like, you know, couldn't look away. I was just like, it's interesting because people are like, this promoted teen pregnancy. And I'm like, actually nothing made me use birth control more as a teenager than 16 and pregnant. But the point is, a few years ago, I was watching and the kids are becoming teenagers themselves. And the show was still on the air at the time. Now it's kind of up in the air as to whether they're getting another season. But I saw like the young kids like shaving their legs for the first time on TV and going bra shopping. And I was like, wow, what a strange experience to have all of that broadcast. But then I got on Instagram and TikTok and I saw the same thing, but it was influencer kids. And I was like, how strange that the cohort of kids that used to have this happen to them was so small. Like it was like the Gosling kids, the Duggar kids, and the Teen Mom kids, basically. But now there are like thousands of influencer kids who have this experience. And so I just started looking into it because I was like really curious about it. And I had my first story about it went completely viral for Teen Vogue because I interviewed the child of a family blogger. And at the end of that story, I was like, I'm just not done. So I got really sucked into that beat. And eventually publishers started asking my agent if I had a proposal. And I said, tell them I just have to polish it. I'll get it to them next week. I didn't have a proposal, but I was like, you got to strike while the iron's hot. I was also 7 months pregnant with my first at the time. But I was like, you got to, you know, this doesn't come around every day that people are asking for your proposal. So I did that. The book sold to Gallery, which is an imprint of Simon & Schuster. And yeah, I got started.
So talk a little bit about who, like how you defined the right people to interview for this book, because I feel the idea of an influencer or mommy blogger is a lot broader than what we thought about. I mean, what's wild about when we're talking right now is, Quinn, I don't know if you are up to date on this.
Yeah,
is
I'm going
like,
to stop you right there. No, I'm not. But you can continue. Like, you know this. Come on.
All right. Brief quiz. Are you up to speed on the Mormon mom reality TV star who was fired from, I mean, she wasn't fired, but she had her own, really? You don't know what I'm about to even
no,
say?
If you or Willow hasn't told me, and again, this is not me trying to diminish those things, except my children don't let me do things that even I want to do. So why would I be able to explore other new things? So go ahead and.
All right. Well, two things. One is they're both pretty fucking dark. But the first one is that another Duggar son has been arrested for child abuse, and so has his wife, right? That's, and then on top of that, and you know who the Duggars are? They were like the 18 kids and counting, or how many kids and counting was, whatever.
Yeah, I think they ended up with 19.
Okay. And one of them already is in jail for child sexual abuse. They were the quiverful, like crazy Christians. Anyway, on top of it, now the Mormons are like and Fortesa talks about this in her book, they create a lot of mom content because they have the time to, and they are, you know, it's their job to make motherhood look really awesome and fun and that you want to do it, especially when you're young. And one of the women from reality, like a reality star, The Secret Lives of Mormon Wives, she was supposed to be the bachelorette, and she was shown abusing her boyfriend/brother of her child, and her child was like in the picture, basically. So the point is, this is kind of like a perfect time for showing how fragile and how dangerous it can be to have these kids live their lives online. However, you were also talking about bloggers and things like that. So I guess my point is, talk to me a little bit about how you defined who you included in this book and what you wanted to get into with them.
So I started with a spreadsheet, as most good projects start. And I just wrote down every like dream source that I had. And these were like the biggest family vloggers and the biggest mom influencers. So people who have millions of subscribers, millions of followers. And then from there, I kind of went down to, you know, fewer followers and fewer subscribers. But I think the fascinating thing for me is that as I was writing this book, new people would rise to prominence that wouldn't have made it onto the first spreadsheet because they weren't in the zeitgeist yet. But there are always new mom influencers and new family vloggers. And so for me, I kind of see it as anyone who is monetizing their content to a meaningful degree. So who is either making their entire income off of this or the bulk of their income. That's kind of how I defined it.
So did you have a hard time getting them to kind of open up to you in a way that was like, how did you get them to talk to you in a way that was like, I'm curious about this and not, I'm going to make you all look like jerks for putting your kids online or, you know, how did you come to them and get them to tell you why they do this and how they do it?
I think it helps that I genuinely don't believe that every family vlogger and mom influencer is evil and immoral and a bad parent. Like, I just don't believe that. And I think that comes across in my previous reporting, and they can read that and see that, like, I'm not a person who's just trying to nail them to the wall. At the same time, I am obviously very aware of the backlash against their entire industry. And so I would kind of frame it as, I know that people have a lot of feelings about this. I'd love to hear your point of view, which is true. I did want to hear their point of view. And I think something that helped was that as I started reporting, I turned in the first draft of this book when I was 7 months postpartum. So I was doing the bulk of the reporting when I was freshly postpartum. And so I could be like, I'm a mom. I get it. We're all making hard decisions. And that really is how I feel. And so I think they were able to look at my content and see that I'm not just like, I hate these people. They're terrible. Because I don't think that's true. I think it's reductive. And I also think it's not that interesting.
Yeah, I was looking at some of the comments on one of your Yahoo pieces and I started to cross because I was like, just sort of these knee-jerk reactions. People don't know how to make money. People are sick. People are things like that. Yeah, talk a little bit about what some of the folks that you highlight in the book. And honestly, if you learned anything from them that either changed your point of view when it comes to writing, documenting your parenting journey, or even like making money as a creator. And just talk a little bit about, you know, sort of the things you learn from them that people might not expect.
You know, I think it was a really interesting time for me to be writing the book, freshly postpartum, because suddenly I had both this empathy for the parents and this sensitivity towards the children that I hadn't had before, or at least not as strongly. Because when my daughter was born, I realized, oh, I would do anything on earth to give her a good life. And if I'm looking around and I'm saying, okay, the middle class is shrinking. If I'm going to go to work, I'm going to spend my entire paycheck on daycare. How am I going to pay for college in 20 years? What am I going to do? There's no, you know, social safety net. There's no maternity leave. Like, I can understand how people would make that decision. And I think going into this, I didn't have as much of a grasp on how vulnerable some of these people were in their positions. And not everyone, right? Some people went from six-figure jobs to making millions of dollars a year. But I feel like oftentimes I was talking to these, especially women who had been in vulnerable situations. They were either single parents or they were stay-at-home moms. They went straight from girlhood to wifehood and motherhood, and they didn't have time to develop themselves into people, or they didn't have the privilege of going to college, or I don't know. I feel like I have been very privileged in my life, and so I didn't have to make these decisions. You know what I mean? But I can understand how if I were looking around and I'm like, I have to make money for my family, but I also can't afford childcare and I want to stay home with my kids, or I live as part of this patriarchal religion that says I can't work outside the home, then what am I going to do? You know, like I think oftentimes, not every time, oftentimes family vlogging and mom influencing is a decision made within the confines of the culture that we live in.
Which is not great.
No.
Just to set the, you can, again, you can slice that 1,000 different ways. Like you said, most people now pay more. Most people who may require childcare will statistically pay more for that than they do for their rent. I mean, most people don't even have mortgage at this point. And we can start right there with literally just the numbers of that trade-off of going, again, assume those are the numbers. Assume if there are two people, if there are two parents present in any way, that both of you have to work. Or like you said, you get to spend all your money on childcare, or you don't make that money and you stay, but then you still can't afford rent, much less everything else, much less like any savings. And it makes you go, I have to be home. I have this thing is potentially lucrative. It isn't even the right word for most people, right? I'm sure it's such a long tail. It's this. You're set up to fail, right?
Totally. And I think it's very dishonest of people to be like, I would never, ever make that decision. Like, I think in my personal life, as like a stable married adult who has a master's degree and has a full-time job and has a husband who has a full-time job, I would not make that decision. But if I were in a more vulnerable position, would I make that decision? Who knows?
Yeah. No, it's disingenuous to be like, even then I wouldn't. It's like, you're wrong. You have a complete inability to see not how the other half lives, how most folks do at this
point. Most people live. Yeah. And then people start this work and they're making their entire former yearly salary off of one brand deal or one video. And then what are you supposed to say? Oh, never mind. I'm going to go back to working for $17 an hour or whatever. Come on.
But then again, like your book, which again, I really loved how much empathy there was in
it.
The ability to do that is some of the best journalism, none of which exists anymore. So thank you for doing that. Just journalism
thank
in
you.
General,
That's
not even good journalists. Just we don't do that anymore. I appreciated that because again, it is complicated because that is true. And there's a really good chance these kids are going to get fucked up. Right. And we all have to make these constant trade-offs. I mean, not you, but it's impossible.
I mean, and as parents, we're all making trade-offs all the time, right?
All the time.
Like my husband jokes that my daughter is going to hate me for not putting her on YouTube. As maybe she will. She's going to be like, you wrote about these people and you didn't give me my own channel. And now I have to like take out a loan for college. Fuck you, mom.
Right.
Yeah. It's very true. And it's interesting because I was thinking about, I can't throw stones when it comes to kids' privacy. Like I saw that you wrote about talking to people about asking them to not to put your kids on Instagram. And I have tried to do some branding content and wasn't my cup of tea in terms of making money, but I've written a lot about parenthood and I have put my kids on social media or sometimes use them to illustrate a story. And as they get older, I ask their permission and I ask their feedback, but I haven't done that since I was a baby, since they were babies. And I said, do you guys want me to stop writing about you? Do you want me to stop my newsletter? And they love it. Like they think it has some cachet. And I don't know how much they're reading it. You know, they may feel differently. But the point is, I have already fumbled, you know, quite heavily in terms of protecting their privacy. And I have to, for me, for someone like me, tell me a little bit about any of these kids that you spoke with who were, you know, broadcast or who did grow up somewhat publicly and reassure me that some of them ended up okay. And then I have it.
No, they definitely did. They definitely did. I mean, I talked to one of the original mom bloggers' daughters who is now, she's in her early 20s. And her mom wrote these like long, like heart plundering missives about like her first day of school and like finding out she was pregnant with her daughter and like these really beautiful essays. And Dylan, the daughter, told me, like, it's really incredible to look back and be able to see what my mom was thinking, because as a child, you think that your parent is the expert. And then I read these essays and I realize, like, she was trying to figure it out, too. And I was like, oh, I'm kind of jealous. I wish I could read about what my mom was thinking when she was raising me.
I have told this before. My mom had my older brother. And then for the next 4.5 years, a bunch of traumatic miscarriages. And an ectopic pregnancy, all these things. And so when I finally showed up in 1982, I was the miracle baby. That did not last very long because we discovered, one, self-awareness. Two, we discovered my siblings and I, the baby book, which was very earnestly written in this beautiful cursive until 18 months where she wrote, Quinn has become a capital T terror and she never made another entry again.
Shut up, I'm dead.
So I know what it's like.
Yeah, at least she was honest.
100%. So,
oh
anyways.
My God.
Yeah.
You're still waiting to update that baby book. Prove yourself. And
I feel like I pulled myself out of the gutter a little bit. She could make some updates.
I don't know. It's so funny. That's up to her. No, that is really interesting. Tell me a little bit about whether, like, both of you guys, I feel like, are, again, much better people. This is, see, exactly where it goes. This is parenting in a nutshell, where I'm like, you guys have made these choices that don't affect me at all. About you choosing not to have your kids online. But of course, I'm like, well, you're clearly doing it to make me feel bad. But talk a little bit about whether that's been difficult in any way, or, you know, I'm sure it's not an easy road to hoe, but yeah, talk about that decision and the kind of feedback you received on it.
Yeah, so you learn all this stuff. You turn it in 7 months postpartum. However, the hormones may be treating you at that point.
Yeah.
What are the practical implications for you, I guess?
For me, I have decided not to show my daughter online. I don't show her face. I don't say her name. I don't really say like personal things about her. And I think part of that is because I don't have a massive platform, but I do have, you know, tens of thousands of followers that I don't know who follow me for work reasons. And so I think I might feel differently about that if I just have a private Instagram with just like friends and family. But for me, after everything that I've read, everything that I've written, all the stories that people have told me, it just doesn't feel like the right decision for me. And I can understand how other people would make a different decision. But even when I was pregnant, I just felt this like extreme protectiveness. And I know that all parents feel this, but like for me, it came out in the way that like, I don't want to show her to other people. Like she's so precious to me. And like, also maybe part of it is that I'm Albanian and we really believe in like the evil eye and like I can get a little like woo-woo about it. But I don't want her to be part of my work. I don't know. I just want to keep it separate.
That makes sense. And Quinn, you guys don't, I don't see your kids ever on social media. I don't think yours or Dana's. You guys agreed on that early on or you just knew that?
Yeah, both. We talked about this in a recent one. For Tessa, my wife is a screenwriter and has been working for a very long time. And we've been going to premieres forever for her things. But recently she co-wrote The Two Wicked. And
oh,
yeah. Besides the fact that, as I've described it, it was like being part of Star Wars for the past 4 years in really mostly wonderful ways. It also, both the content of the movies, her having worked on them for so long, basically my kids are 11, 12, 13. So basically half of their lives, essentially.
Yeah.
And then a third of their lives has been inescapable promotion, all of it. Again, wonderful. But then when we got to premiere time, especially this year, but even before, we thought if we're ever going to let them see mom at work and be celebrated, why not this one, which is like the first movie of hers that she's made that we wanted them to see and all the, you know, all this different stuff. And so, you know, I mean, Claire knows, like, they came to the premieres and we took some pictures. Not a lot. We had like our friend who's the studio photographer do a couple, but they're in the thing. Those were the first opportunity when pictures could have, not at our direct instruction, but even inadvertently, been online. Right?
Right.
I don't think they're in Getty or anything like that because, first of all, no one gives a shit about.
Yeah.
Right? They're like, we're going to cut those up. We got some really nice ones that they sent us.
That's
lovely. That was the first time, I guess, we let our guard down on purpose, that, if that makes sense. There's definitely been times, and again, we've struggled with it. And I would love to, at the end of all this, come back to like, if you've come to any actionable things that feel good for people who are like, well, I do want to share these with my family and friends, at least, even if there's a line, but we can get to all that. So that was our decision making. Again, would it be different if my wife wasn't part of that, of that whole world? Would our decision, Claire, be making different? I don't know. Probably. I don't know. Yeah, or if we needed to or whatever. I don't know. I don't know. But that's where we are for now.
And I think it's good to have like boundaries that are flexible in that way. I think that it can be taken too far in one direction or the other. And if you were to say, oh, I don't want my kids to come celebrate my wife at this incredible professional achievement because they might get some pictures taken, that feels a little, you know what I mean?
It was very clear because we had been going to these things for years. Either we bring them or we do not, because there is no way to escape that. But also, they're grown up so fast. Why wouldn't we want to have for ourselves some photos of this occasion that'll probably never happen again in some way, you know? So it is, again, that is a problem 99.9% of people will never have to confront. But for us, it was interesting after 10 years of trying to toe the line on that stuff. And frankly, being pretty judgmental about people who just, you know, all that shit. Because again, it's almost, you know, again, and my other podcast is much less fun. But it's like when you shit on people for needing Medicaid or being sick or having all these, you know, chronic diseases, when it turns out 8 out of 10 of the conditions are socioeconomic economic problems, right? That's what we do best in this country. And you can apply that to sharing your kids.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Quinn, do your kids' schools put them, do social media? Do they share like broadcast?
I think poorly, you know, like most public schools. Like, who are they paying to do that job? Mm. You know, like sometimes one of their sports teams might do it. And I used to check the don't do this box, but I was like, Now they're not going to be with their friends in the fucking picture, which was different when they were three and they didn't know what was going on. And someone was like, look, blocks.
This conversation is making me realize, like, I need to get off my high horse a little bit, because we've talked a lot on the pod about how low-key proud I was that we didn't give our son a smart device until earlier this year. But they are on social media for the kids' schools. And then, of course, if they are on Maine and it looks cute, I will put it, like, on stories. And then we have been making movies with our kids since he was a few weeks old, because that's what my husband and I do. And I think of us as being different from influencers, because it's not the same channels, but he has been making goofy movies his whole career, like short films, and then I've been a part of it. So we made some video where, a cone. We got an orange traffic cone. We made a video where you put a cone over your baby to warn people that there's a baby there. And he was like this big at the time. And I'm like, why am I acting like we're such holier than thou people when our baby's been on YouTube? Like, we just didn't have a channel or a hashtag or tell people to like, follow, and subscribe. But his ass has been like literally online since, his belly button hadn't even fallen off yet. So
yeah, no, totally.
We're no better than anyone else. How old is your daughter currently?
He is 22 months.
Oh, okay. So you're going to be like right. Quinn, do you have any advice on introducing a sibling to an older sibling?
Don't do it. No, honestly, I wish I'd give the older one presents and as much attention, if not much more. Because here's the thing. The baby has no fucking idea. Unless they're, again, like the book our pediatrician wrote 100 years ago, which I really can't recommend enough. Eat, sleep, and poop. If they don't need to eat, if you're lucky and they're healthy, if they're not eating, if they don't need to eat, if they don't need to sleep, if they don't need to poop, you can more or less ignore them. Like, the older child is the one who's like, where the fuck did mom go again? I don't understand. Tried to do gifts to big kid and hang out with them. No one cares about it. I love babies, but the baby doesn't even know they have hands. So it doesn't matter.
They can just stare at the ceiling fan.
Yeah, good luck. I tried to tell my oldest recently about how I had this love seat in my home office and there was a divot between the two cushions. And I would just put him in it because he couldn't, again, didn't know he had hands. Where was he going to go? And we didn't have a bouncer. I was like, you're going here. And he was like, so I would just stay there. I was like, where the fuck were you going to go? And how were you going to get there? Yeah. That was your babysitter, bud. Like, I don't know. That's it. Like, I got shit to do.
Our second kid, I remember putting him on the bed so I could take a shower because he was a newborn. And I'm like, for the first one, I think you would talk about putting the baby in the bathroom with you because you would be too afraid. And I'm like, and the second one, you're like, what was he going to go for 10 minutes or 5 minutes? We had those little backpacks that look like animals, like they're not regular size. They're just like little children backpacks. We got one for our older son, like hedgehogs are sort of his totem animal. And when his brother was born, we got him a hedgehog backpack. We're like, this is from your brother. James brought this. And it wasn't so many years later that he was like, how was a newborn baby able to bring a present into the world? But
don't ask questions
about that.
So here's a question I have. Again, now that Claire and I are 1,000 and you've described that now you've had so many conversations with people who were children as part of these things, how would they handle their own children now? Because not only are the same mechanisms there that weren't there when Claire and I was growing up, and even when we were having our first kids, they're still there, but now there's so much more. I mean, you can make a deep fake of your baby, on the shittiest Android phone you can find. How are they sort of seeing it? What is the next generation?
It's interesting because it really runs the gamut. Obviously, there are influencer kids who have grown up and who have, become parent influencers in their own right. But someone that I'm really interested in is there's these twins. They're 25. Their names are Brooklyn and Bailey. And I always forget which one had the child. But one of them had a child. They're Mormon, of course. And I think it was Bailey had her first child a year ago. And she posted a birth blog. She posted photos of herself giving birth to him in a tub. And it was very intimate, but his face was covered. And I was really fascinated by that because she was raised on a vlogging channel. And she first went viral when she was 11 or 12. And she's still an influencer in her own right. I mean, she's massive. They have tens of millions of followers and they have their own businesses and what looks like a really nice life. And it looks like she's not scarred from being an influencer kid because she's continuing to be an influencer now. But at the same time, her son is now one and she's never shown his face and she said that she never plans to. And so it's fascinating to me because she's not in one way rebelling against the way that she was raised, because she's continuing to be an influencer and to do that work. But at the same time, she's making a different choice for her son.
Yeah. That's super interesting. That's super interesting. Here is my first sort of experience with this sort of thing. This person's a good friend. Use his name, whatever. When I first moved out to Los Angeles to be with the lady who became my wife, turned out we lived two doors down from an actor she was working on in a movie with, Jason Bateman. And Jason had at the time, a two-year-old daughter. I think she was two. And he was very kind to me. I didn't have any friends and I was dealing with some stuff. And so he starts taking me to baseball games all the night. And eventually I had this two questions for him. One, you have a two-year-old daughter. How do you get to go to a baseball game every night?
Yeah.
And he was like, it's a good question. Thanks for asking. He said, one, my daughter goes to bed at like 6. So after that, my wife would like me to leave. So I took that note and I go to a baseball game because they start at 7. I was like, okay, logistically that adds up. I'm like, that's so weird that your wife, wouldn't you guys want to hang out? Turns out, not at all.
Turns out we all need some time to ourselves.
Get the fuck out. And his other thing was, and this is going to get to the child exposure thing, was he was like, look, man, I don't know how much you know about my history. You know, I was Arrested Development fan and all that, like everybody else. But he was like, I did the whole child thing. And then there's Arrested Development. And he's like, in the middle is a whole bunch of vices that are really not good. A lot of time in Vegas, a lot of time in drugs and all this. And so the end of that story is him going, my wife knows very well that my vices could be much worse than eating peanuts at a baseball game. Doesn't drink anymore, all these things. But it's that in-between part where he talks about, and he talks on their podcast. I've heard for years now, he's been very open about coming up a child actor, dealing with money with his parents, being exposed. Again, like you said, the in-between there, some of those early Duggan family stuff like that, if there weren't cameras, you could not expose your children, and now it's totally different. In his time, there were 5 fucking channels, and there were 100 million people that watched all of them. So he was more exposed than anybody, and how that fucked him up, and a lack of education, and again, the money stuff with his parents. So that was my first thing of being like, oh, that's really interesting. And then my wife had a TV show with some kids in it, and all the different rules they had to follow, like how much education they had to get, and by who, and on set, and how long they could work. How different it was in Canada where they shot most of it and this and that. And that was really interesting to me going through your work, realizing, oh, there's no protections.
There's
for any
none
of this.
Of that. No, it's funny because I live in LA too. My husband works in the industry and he says the same thing. He's like, when there are kids on set, like there are like multiple people whose entire jobs it is to make sure that we're following the rules.
As my wife says, I'll never do it again. It was, she's loved those kids, but it was impossible to do it to the, you need forget the morality part. But that was always so interesting to me, is like that affected him. And I'm sure there were fewer rules back then and now there's more. But like, how do we even begin to carve something like that out if we can at all?
You know, I don't know that you can, because especially in the US where we so prize parental rights and parental freedom, it's like the work of an influencer child inherently takes place in the home. And so that's like us going into someone's home and saying, this is what you can do with your child, which we are very against doing in American culture. The other thing is, it's very difficult to say how much work goes into an end product of, let's say it's like a 60-second Instagram reel or TikTok, like how much work really went into that. It could have been 6 hours of filming and editing, or it could have been totally off the cuff and it took, 3 minutes. But you can't tell, right? And the other thing is, with family vloggers specifically, so much of their work is indistinguishable from their lives. So it unfolds together. And so how do you even start to legislate that or to put protocols in place when like this is all happening in the privacy of the home? Like, this is something that I think about is like child actors, like they go to set, right? And like their work is contained on a set. But like for kid influencers, their work is their home and their set is their life, you know? So it's so complicated to try to figure out.
I was surprised that you got some parents to talk to you about how some of their content or their best performing content is where kids are in distress or something bad has happened to them. How did you, again, get them to talk about that? I mean, I have written a blog post about when my son Oh, God, this is so embarrassing. I accidentally lightly kicked him in the head because I was trying to do a somersault and it went awry. No. And he did this thing. He basically passed out. And for a second, I was like, I killed my son. Like, he was so floppy.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I wrote about the experience because it was so traumatizing. And of course, ended up being like, he was like happy toddler, so loved the attention. Like, it was all fine. But, you know, I still, again, as I speak about this, I'm like, I was writing content because it helped me sort it out. And I thought maybe it would make another parent feel better. On the same end, we still wrote about my kid being in distress. So far be it from me to be like, I can't believe these parents would do that.
Anyway. I do think, though, mm-hmm. that there is a fundamental difference between writing about distress and showing distress. I do think that because, like, I have seen videos in the reporting of this book that I will never forget of children struggling to breathe or, you know, crying about their dad who's estranged from them. Or, you know, it's just like things that I think there is a fundamental difference. And maybe that's naive, but I do think there is.
No, I mean, I can see that. But again, I feel like I'm not qualified to even put in judgment values on that. But I mean, I was just impressed that you got folks to speak about that and without being defensive and just being real with you about the performance of that.
I mean, I think I honestly just asked what content does the best for you. And several of them said on the record, it's when the kids are distressed, when they're sick or sad or injured. And I think I had that instinct for a while just as a consumer of content and as a journalist. But for them to know that consciously and to also be willing to admit it was very interesting to me.
Now, I want to talk about Get Off My Internet for a second.
Yeah.
Although, Quinn, do you have anything else you want to mention before I dive into this? Because this is like a whole subculture of mommy blogging.
Nobody
that
cares
I have a feeling.
About questions. Go ahead.
I want to give you space because you're a man and, you know.
We had our time.
Men need space. We have to give men space.
Yeah. No, but giving me space is my wife being like, you can take all your fucking toys and go to this little office downtown and just come back occasionally.
All right. So, shut up. No, do you, Quinn, do you know what Get Off My Internets is, what GoMe is? Okay. Do you agree with my analysis or my analogy that it's a 4chan for mommy bloggers, or that is my... I don't know if you agree with that analogy, but why don't you go ahead and explain it to Quinn? Because sometimes we all
or
say
just
that
have the conversation without me, and I'll just sit here.
No, because I think it should be enlightening. It's really dark, and also, I think men need to know, dads need to know what women are capable of online. Basically,
yeah. No, well, Get Off My Internets was kind of the way that I see it. Is it was like a precursor to snark subreddits that we have now, and so Get Off My Internets was kind of this like tabloid-esque website where people would go and talk shit about their favorite or least favorite mommy bloggers. And it was kind of like Perez Hilton, but for like online creators.
Yeah. But it was a really strange place because it was a strange combination of, I hate this writer and I can't stop taking her in and I can't stop talking about her. And I know the feeling, but I feel like I'm self-aware enough to at least not leave a digital trail of like when I'm snarking on someone. But the person who ran that site, and I don't know if it's still alive, like it got some really dark stuff. Who was the woman who there was a blogger, God, who was it who died by suicide not that long
Heather
ago?
Heather Armstrong.
Yes, thank you, Deuce. And there was no pity for her. They were sort of keeping track of every problematic thing she said. And they're like, you know, and there was the implication, good, or this is the natural conclusion. Or I remember reading posts about someone whose kid was maybe not supervised well enough in the pool. And there was this weird combination of like judgment and delight that this
glee.
Glee. Anyway, I just thought it was really just this weird darkness of being like, I can't imagine hating something so much and also not being able to look away and feeling comfortable to share that. So talk about that, basically, the snark world for the mom bloggers and how that manifests and whether the mom bloggers, I know Jordan certainly knew about it, like how much they're aware of that take.
I mean, snark subreddits are wild. As I was explaining them to my mom in the reporting of this book, she said the same thing where she was like, if I hate something, I don't want to spend my time talking and thinking about it. Okay, so snark subreddits, they exist for specific influencers. And then there are also like overall ones that are like blog snark or like parent influencer snark. But basically, even creators with only like hundreds of thousands of followers, which like relatively is not that many, will have these snark subreddits where thousands of people just dissect their every move, and they repost everything that the creator posts, and they talk shit about it. And they basically, the thing that fascinates me so much about snark subreddits is that it's like almost indistinguishable from fan behavior, except that instead of love, it's hate. And so in my research, I found this concept of the anti-fan, which is basically just that you're engaging in fan-like behavior, but it's not for love, it's for hate. And there's also this kind of like moral high ground that snarkers feel that they have, where they don't think that they're talking shit or that they're hating. They think that they're raising awareness or that they're shedding a light on this problematic person. But they will tear apart anything and everything. And it is so bleak.
Yeah.
Isn't this just Star Wars fans when there's a black person on screen?
It's kind of amazing because
we love the franchise.
It was when you were writing about that, I was like, man, we like to say that like young men online really cornered the market on like toxic online behavior. Yeah. But you're like, mom writers and their consumers really were ahead of the game in that. And I'm trying to think of like, I'm imagining like maybe Nicki Minaj type fans are like that, but that's a whole other line of thought. How much do the moms who do create the content or the families, how much are they aware of the snark? And do you feel like they create content sort of trying to do snark protection on themselves, or are they just trying to ignore it? I don't know how much they engage with that kind of...
They're definitely very aware of the content. I think even if they don't seek it out, people send it to them. Even like people that they actually know will be like, oh my God, did you see like this rumor about you like on Reddit or whatever? And I think the moms that I talked to, they were like, there is this instinct to try to address the snark pages and be like, no, this is actually the truth. But then they're like, that's what they want, right? It's for me to acknowledge them. And there's this like feeling of like the snarkers think that they're very powerful. Like they will post what the creator posts and then be like, oh, they totally posted this because of this comment that I wrote the other day. And it's just, there's this really lopsided feeling of power. But I think most of the time the creators try to avoid the snark pages because it's just, I cannot imagine how horrific it is for your mental health to see thousands of people just being like, you're a bitch, you're a child exploiter, you're ugly, you're fat, like whatever. Like, I'm like, that I can't imagine.
Yeah.
When my wife sees favorable reviews of a trailer of her movie, it's difficult to deal with. I can't imagine someone being like, your baby's fat, that's your fault.
Yeah. I mean, I know what it's like. I am grateful in your book that you... At least conveniently for me, you sort of delineate between blogging / writing / video. But yeah. I know what it's like. And I think I've established for myself knowing how much sharing or oversharing can get you. And I had published back in the day things about, and again, this is, I'm writing, I'm trying to make a buck. I'm trying to make sense of my life as a parent and trying to put my point of view out in the world. So like I've done pieces about having drinks while pregnant or choosing not to breastfeed. And I've seen comments that are like, I hope your husband leaves you because you're so selfish. Or I hope her baby is born with a birth defect just to teach her a lesson. And being like, okay, that is enough. And I will never like Google myself on Reddit or anything because I don't like whatever. There's nothing I need to hear that could be worse than that. But, there's folks, it gets a little interesting because the critique can kind of tip into that. I've been asked to quote, what do you think about mommy influencers that we kind of all love to hate? But I prefer not to think about them if they make me feel less than. And I think it's curious for you what it was like to have to focus up on this kind of, some of it is positive, some of it is neutral, some of it is negative / banal, but it was like to work on that when you had a new baby and you kind of, and this baby is like here in the real world, but you have to focus on this virtual world.
On one hand, it felt really difficult. And on one hand, it was kind of a relief because my entire world was about a baby, right? And my entire world was suddenly about being a mother and about breastfeeding and about pumping schedules and nap time and like, it felt like everyone else in the real world was just like living their actual lives. And then I would go online and I would go into this research and these women were just entirely consumed by motherhood in the way that I felt I was consumed by motherhood. But at the same time, like they seemed to be handling it so much better than I was. They were like up a week after their baby was born and making sourdough and, you know, whatever. And like, I had a crash C-section. I couldn't even lift my daughter for 4 weeks. So I would watch this stuff and it would be a relief because I wasn't the only mom in the world. And then also I would be like, oh, I'm a really shitty mom and I should be doing more and I should look beautiful while I do it. You know, so it's just, it makes you feel really bad.
Yeah. I can't imagine. I mean, I would only want to know people who like, who did what you did and went online. You're like, this is what I look like right now. And I don't mean to sound, I know that sounds, you know, like a backhanded compliment, but like about being, because there is another world. And I bet there's people out there, and I'm not saying this build you up, but I'm sure there's people out there who's, you have a beautiful baby and you have a book coming out and you're pregnant again. You have it all, you know?
And, totally. And people have said that to me, like, how do you do it? And I'm like, I'm not doing it well. I'm like barely holding on by the skin of my teeth. And I think that's important to show, you know, and there is a part of me that I hid this for as long as I could, that I was pregnant and that I was having such a terrible pregnancy. But then the evidence like showed up on my face and then I couldn't hide it anymore. But I do think it's kind of a relief to just share like, yeah, this fucking sucks. It sucks. I hate being pregnant. I'm having a really hard time. I'm trying to get this book out. I'm trying to be a present mother to my toddler, and it's hard. And like, I love the content that shows that side of it, but it is really hard to be that vulnerable.
Let me tell you about a podcast that's about commiserating and parenting during these times.
Tell me.
As we tell people, it's not an advice podcast because it's not going great.
Yeah. No. So hard.
Although you should, when you potty train your first child or your second child, have the first one reward them. If you're giving M&Ms out, this is one thing I learned from my older kid, or I learned with my older kid, give the older kid 2 M&Ms and they give the younger kid an M&M when they potty train so they can feel like they are part of it. I know that's a long way out for you, but you know.
No, that's smart.
That's
trickle
deep.
Down bribery is a.
No, I can't wait to use them against each other.
If I could, truly, though, you just nailed it. If I could recommend one thing about parenting more than one kid, it's bribery. It is fucking great. It is great. It works all the time.
Yeah.
I think that book writing is a lot like kid raising, where you're sort of like, oh, this is up to me how this is going to go. And a lot of it is out of my hands. And like, I have a friend who, she published her first book a couple of years ago or last year. And she had been on this journey of selling the book and building the book. And she always felt like the success and happiness was just one step beyond her. And I sort of was like, you will publish this book, but you will realize every step of the way that you did not get fame and fortune. You did not get personal gratification. There's always a way that you could be feeling like you like fucked up or haven't taken advantage of something. And I'm like, and I think there are some parallels there where you're like, there's the effort I put forth. And then what comes of it sort of has nothing to do with me. And I'm going to have to figure out how to make my peace with it.
Yeah. I mean, it's terrifying. And I think I'm a really obsessive control freak. And I've learned in parenthood that like my daughter doesn't give a shit about what my schedule is. She doesn't care that I need her to sleep until a certain time so I can finish work. She just doesn't care. She's doing her own thing. And I do feel like with the book, it's like I've put everything that I have into it, like I have with parenting. And like, however it comes out is how it comes out. And it also kind of feels like the way that like when I send my daughter to the park, I like hope that the other kids are nice to her. I like hope that people are nice to my book, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm just curious, and Quinn, I know you're not that online that much, but you must have both you guys. I'm just curious if you could describe right now what your algorithm looks like in terms of the parenting / extracurriculars around parenting material you're getting in terms of advertisements or, you know, any kind of thing like that. Like what kind of person it thinks you are or you're interested in?
I
think that my algorithm has realized that I'm not like an activity mom, because it used to give me all the like, this is how, you know, keep your toddler busy for 45 minutes, but it's 45 minutes of prep time. And I was just like, this is fucking dumb and I'm not doing it. Like, we're doing coloring books and she loves it, you know? So I think it's realized that. So I feel like I get some of the like hot mess mom content because they know that like I'm doing my best.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a lot of parent shit talking content. I do. My algorithm does still think I'm a baseball mom. So I will get sometimes these shirts that are like awful. It'll say baseball moms are the prettiest, or earrings like baseballs. And I'm like, fuck you, idiot. I'm not doing this season. So find something else to show me. There is a kind of feed that I get, and I want someone to get to the bottom of this, where there's a kind of mom account that seems kind of AI, where it will build like a some kind of craft or activity to do with your kids. And it is, like you said, so much work for the weirdest little kind of payoff. And the, and often the comments are a snark and like to be like, wow, what a huge waste of time or whatever. And I'm like, are they doing this on purpose to snag you into being like, what the fuck is this? Or is this person actually know that the activity they're doing where they're pouring out, I don't know, bottles of detergent to put in food coloring? And I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking about? I don't come up for you like at all. Yeah. But it's a weird side of the internet that, again, I'm apparently caught in its net. So I deserve it.
Maybe just some rage bait, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Quinn, what are you getting?
Well, ignoring like my favorite soccer players, my favorite soccer team, which is all over the feed. I've got my buddy, Brian, who accidentally had twin boys with someone, is trying to make, he makes them food. So they show me that. I just got a really great post from the Reductress, which is one of my favorite accounts. And it's applicable here because it's clearly about the sandwich generation parenting. I don't know where it went, but it was basically like how to make your dad mad by asking him about his women's bracket.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
There's been a lot of, I think we've talked about it, like rec sports. We got to bring back the rec sports because we've made it impossible for families to afford to ruin kids that way too by hurting them and making them pay $10,000 a year to, you know, be on a travel basketball team at age 4. Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting.
Mine is showing me a lot of like preppy, bougie kids and their moms challenge them by saying square up, meaning take a fighting stance. And then the point is to show what like a soft kid you're is because your kid doesn't know what you're talking about. And it is cute. And then again, I don't know who these kids are. I don't want to know about them, but they are cute little slices of life where I'm like, you know, I've seen this as a trend. But do you, Fortes, have you found like there, I know you are busy. You're busy being sick. You're busy being pregnant. You're busy promoting the book. But have you found any of these people that you've written about that you end up caring about and like checking in on and like you follow along with them, or even people who aren't in the book that, you know, kind of low key do like to kind of just follow along with what they're putting out there?
I follow so many mom influencers and family bloggers, and it's both for work and because, I think I get like a little bit, I get interested in them and attached to them, and I want to know what's going to happen next in their lives. It's like watching TV, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm older than you. When you said 32, I was like, oh God, because I'm 46. And so there's something about, I was blogging age, and then when videos, like vlogs started happening, I was like, I'm not pressing play. Like I read words, I don't watch images. And so I know who some of these people are, but like when the Ruby Frank or Frankie, how do you pronounce
Frankie,
her?
Yeah.
When that all stuff happened, I had never heard of her before all that. And I was like, that was wild to me to imagine like watching installments of someone's life like that. But again, that's like the written word versus video. So,
yeah.
Have you guys seen the guy biking with his kid on the front little basket saying daddy?
Yes. I love that kid.
That was the first thing that popped up in our Not Right Now feed, which I was trying to log into for the first time in 6 months. So I feel like that's pretty good. Right?
Yeah.
That is a very cute little guy. Now, Forte, so like I have a last main question for you, but what is your philosophy going to be about looking up what people are saying about the book? Because your site, your book might be in Blog Snark, basically.
Yeah.
Are you going to be tracking that and, you know, looking in on that? And how are you going to square all that?
Honestly, I think I will. I think I want to say that I won't, but I will. I mean, even like when reviews come out now, I'm just like reading every word. But I do think that specifically the snarkers, I think, will not be pleased with the book, both because they have their own chapter and because they're going to think that I wasn't hard enough on these people. But that's not the kind of book I'm writing. So,
yeah. That's great. You are a great parent. If you're doing something where it makes nobody happy, you are ready for two
fucking
kids.
That is
100%. I say a lot, like, I don't care what you just get out of here. Just stop it.
Yeah, totally.
That's
amazing. I think that's a good philosophy. When is the book coming out?
April 7th.
Okay. And when is the baby due?
The end of June.
Okay. So you have a little bit of time to take your ass on tour and do some promotion, things like that.
Yeah.
That's really exciting. How is the LA heat treating you at this moment?
You know, it's okay for me because I'm on the west side. I'm in Venice.
Oh,
and so
must
it's
be
not
nice.
Bad.
Got it.
I know my husband goes to Burbank for work and he's like, it's 100 degrees. And I'm like, oh, it's 75 here. I'm warm. And he's like,
it's misty.
Up.
Yeah. Go fuck yourself. I do want to come back to really quick. So when we first had our kids, bang, bang, bang. And after a bunch of IVF miscarriage and stuff. most of her family was on the East Coast. And it was, what year was that? Late 2012, 2013.
Yeah.
And we're like, we do want to share pictures and stuff with them on the, not just like a photo album that nobody checks on, like whatever. Yeah. So we used, we decided on the Apple shared photo albums. We found that, and again, I don't know. We were just like, this is not contracted out to somebody else. People can't, you know, it is a way of doing it. It is like seemingly like the first sort of private Instagram feed. We found that helpful because I don't, people are so spread apart. People are everywhere and everyone is so busy and no one gets to spend time with the people they really want to spend time with, right? They were trying to make it. And so I do want to put these with people. Okay, but then how do I share my kids with people and fun little videos and stuff that I know I trust these people to invite only. They're not going to, you know, again, deep fake it into whatever.
Yeah.
Do you have any other practical things like that for those people who genuinely do want to share?
I know there are apps that are kind of like similar to Google Photos where you can just, it's by invite only and the only people who can see it are that. I know people also do like close friends on their Instagram. So like they don't post it to everyone, but they post it to their close friends list, which is just like a small list of people. Yeah. I mean, I think there are ways to feel safe about it and to feel good about it. I think with the advancement of AI, probably the more private, the better. And so something like Google Photos or these apps that are specifically made for that, I think are probably the best bet. But it is hard because, you know, your kids are so cute and you want to share them and you want to brag about them and you want to show your family. And it's hard.
Especially if they're 3,000 miles away, you know, or further, or whatever. And the grandparents are like, I would like to see them more. And you're like, I get it, but I also would not like to farm them out or whatever.
You know? Right.
What do you use? How do you share with grandparents and things like that?
Yeah. I mean, we just, we text a lot. Like we send tons of photos. I do have a close friends list on Instagram where I have like my cousins and like my aunts and stuff where I'll post there. But mostly it's just, yeah, just us texting everything. And yeah, I just try to stay away from it. It just doesn't, just doesn't sit right with me.
And then in the future, this happened to me where my son showed me an AI image he had made of himself as an NFL player. And you're both like horrified and also impressed that he like knows how to do that. And he shows you how to make a sticker of himself that you can put on texts that he sends you in the future. And you're like, just let me lay down in the cold ground.
Just let me drive the dust here for just a moment.
Yeah, I'm ancient. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, God, I'm so old.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Exactly. It's too old, and also not old enough to.
You are now like experienced mom number two, bacon coming down the pipe, treating you so well. What would your just general, again, bring so much empathy to this without ignoring like the potential issues that can be real for sure. What would your general advice be to someone who's, you know, again, no one's actually having babies anymore, which is a whole other thing. But imagine someone was and was celebrating it because their pregnancy wasn't a nightmare yet.
Yeah.
They're like, great, I can start to share. What would your general philosophy be?
I think I would try to think of your child in a few years and whether they would appreciate what you're sharing then. So, I mean, like potty training content is just a no-go for me, or like content of tantrums or like children in distress. And I think thinking of your kids as someone outside of yourself is really difficult. And thinking of them as someone who will eventually be an adult is even more difficult, but they are, and they deserve that privacy, especially for those intimate moments.
I mean, it seems rational.
Yeah. It seems rational, but you can't imagine how many potty training videos I've seen.
Oh, I'm sure.
That's awful. I mean, I shouldn't talk about that. Again, it's just, I still remember.
All be true at the same time.
I've also written about potty training, and I don't even want to, again, this conversation is making me uncomfortably face the things that I have. But, you know, it's like, well, it's about less about here's how my son potty trained versus here's how I found this book worked for us, you know.
Well, I think genuinely we've actually done a pretty decent job with this show of like we do occasionally like very strategically and precisely shit talk our kids specifically. But most of the time it is actually about the parenting.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think that's the thing that everyone knows their kids are shitheads. Sorry, it's what's going to happen. It's more just like other parents being like, oh, yeah, no, I totally feel the specific situation.
We did clip and share a story where I said I hated my son a couple weeks ago because of the way he yelled at me.
Again, when they deserve it, I'll firebomb them in a moment. I don't care.
Yeah.
He did deserve it.
They know.
Yeah. So the point is, I'm unrepentant and I'm going to go even harder and share their asses even
more. You should. Do it. I'll write about you next.
Yeah. Yeah. Unrepentant bad moms. Congratulations on the book. It's really interesting.
Thank you.
For thought. I think it's going to be an interesting, like, time capsule, but also looking back. I mean, again, you make me realize, like, how none of this is that new. I mean, it is, but it isn't. And there is a fine line between expressing yourself and, you know, as you talk about making money, it's not just fun money or whatever. Like, some folks, this is their income and, like, how they really pay the bills. And so anyway, but also I really take my hat off to you for doing this all at once. I can't imagine.
Thank you.
Just simply having how do you say GV or roommate? What is it? GB?
Oh, HG. Yeah.
HG. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
Feel bad for Kate Middleton for having to go through that and like
same, but also I'm like so jealous because I'm sure she had 24/7 nurses and doctors. I'm just like, why am I not a princess and someone can just come take care of me?
I know. Well, I feel like she's one of the original original snarker, because it's also people like, look at her post cancer wig, like,
yeah,
bitch, like her husband's cheating on her. Everyone hates her. You know. Anyway,
out
there.
Where can people follow you and not find pictures of your children and other ways to support your work as you go ahead?
Yeah. Well, you can buy my book wherever you buy books. It's available everywhere. And you can find me on social media everywhere at Hi Fortessa, HIFORTESA.
I asked my other guests in my other show what book they would recommend. It can be something pertinent to their area of expertise, what they're working on. But a lot of times in these times, it's a lot of distracting things. I want to ask you, what is the repeat kids book for your 22-month-old at this moment?
You know, what it is Go Dog Go. She's obsessed.
Yeah.
It's a classic, you know?
Sure.
Yeah.
Claire doesn't read to her kids. She doesn't care about them. That's why they're so fucked up.
James was reading about Jackie Robinson in me this morning. So
there you go.
So who's woke now, bitch? You know what? Yeah. You're allowed to read next to me. I don't read to.
Parallel
for free. That's great. I love that. Enjoy the time with just her. And be wild. She won't remember this. You know, it's funny.
I know.
My younger son was jealous because I make, you know, like Shutterfly photo albums once a year for my grandparents. And we had a couple of my older son just before his younger brother came. And at some point, I am secretly a good mom and a sucker. My younger son asked me to make him a photo album of only pictures of him because he always said, so I did of just
That's
James.
Sweet.
My older brother calls the years where my mom was having horrific miscarriages before I showed up the golden years. So there's that.
This is what we do for our kid.
Yes. I hope that you have a much easier birth this time, by the way. I hope that... I do think knowledge is power. And it's weird because they treat you at the hospital like you've been there before. Like, they're like, you've done this.
Yeah.
You know, you can do this yourself. And you're like, wait, you know, but it does kind of help a little bit to be like, all right, I know what a hospital looks like. I know how bad the sleep is going to be, like, whatever, all this stuff. So I hope that it makes it slightly easier on the way. So, thank you for being on the pod with us. And I hope you feel better. Yeah. I'm really sorry.
It's okay. Thank you for having me. I had such a blast.
That's it for this week.
You're gonna make it. You're doing great. Or you're just doing it. Or just you, period.
Just stop right there. But for more, you can hit subscribe right in your podcast player of choice.
Please share our show with another parent in your life or anyone who might get a kick out of listening to what the hell we're going through.
And if you have literally 3 seconds, just push your thumb against the 5-star review button wherever you might be listening.
But no pressure, honestly. We know you're busy.
Head to notrightnow.show for more, or send us feedback, questions, horror stories, doxing, whatever it is, at questions@notrightnow.show.